It's episode 115 of the Nerdstravaganza Podcast, a worthy sequel to the 114th episode by any measure. I'm Tom, reprising my role as Tom.
I'm Eric Jr., son of the great character from episode 1.
I'm Brian, being played this week by Brian.
And in this episode, our all-star cast will be converting our dream factory into a studio so that we can craft perfect sequels to some of our favorite films. At least I'm thinking they're favorite, perhaps not. But first, we'll give you, dear listeners, a backlot tour with our weekly geekly update. Eric, why don't you go first, sir? Hop off your director's chair and let people know what you've been up to this week.
Well, this week marks my return to work. I am a school teacher, and although this isn't an official week back at work, it has been some workshops that my school was offering that I'm attending. And as much as I love my job, and I do, they really do spoon-feed us to the point where it's almost nauseating. It's been about, or part of the workshop was about introducing this new software that we're going to be using, and literally they handed us a paper that is like step-by-step instructions that are like, type your username, and then step two is like press enter. So it's been making me pull my hair out a little bit. On top of that, I'm still reeling from the Studio Ghibli news. I know some of the news has been a little blown out of proportion based on certain interviews that were done in Japan, but that said, it still seems to me that when I read the information that the animation studio itself is still going to shut down for a undisclosed amount of time, and they're going to focus on licensing. So to me, that doesn't sound that much different than what we thought in the first place. That being said, I've taken the time to watch a few films over the past few days. I've rewatched Nausicaa, I've rewatched Spirited Away, although that's nothing new for me. And I rewatched one that I don't watch that often, which is Porco Rosso, and realized just how much I love that film.
I'm going to have to take a tour of their creative output now, because I've seen a few here and there, and now that I know that they are a going away thing, I naturally want to get into their work so that I can lament their potential passing.
Yeah, I was going to speak with a local business that we've made mention of before, Grind Coffee Project, and discuss perhaps doing a coffee / Hayao Miyazaki marathon locally. So we'll keep our listeners and local listeners informed of that one.
Sounds good, man. Anything else?
That's about it for now.
Okay. Executive producer Brian / creator, I guess you're like / head of audio animatronics, if those were used in movies. Sure. What's up, man? What have you been up to?
Well, just today, actually, the new PlayStation Plus games came out, so I hopped right on that Dragon's Crown for both the PS3 and the Vita are completely free right now.
Yes.
So I was pretty excited about that.
Does that mean we can play together?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent.
Let's see. Played... This was kind of a big deal. I guess I'm just going to call them STJs. My German's terrible. The German Game of the Year for tabletop games came out a little while ago, and Istanbul was pretty much like the biggest game of the year for board games. So I got a chance to play that last Thursday at Adventure Game Store. We had played it once before, but it was really slapped together, kind of like learn this as we go game, and I don't think we had done a lot right. So having a few people familiar with the rules and having some idea what you're actually supposed to do from the beginning made it a little bit more enjoyable. Very, very cool game. I can almost see why it won. I think I would rather play Splendor, but it's still very good.
Cool. Once again, our relationship with the Adventure Game Store in nearby Davie, Florida pays dividends.
And lastly, I am finishing up a painting project that I've been working on in secret for a long time, and I'm finally getting to the point where I think I can share some of this stuff. I'm probably going to be posting not necessarily tutorials, but like a little like how I did it, not necessarily how you should do it blog on our good old nerdstravaganza.com in the short-term future.
Very cool. Just remember, people don't want lectures. I say that because somebody criticized me one time for, like, lecturing, so I'm, like, totally self-conscious about it now. Awesome, man. Looking forward to that. Anything else?
That's it for me, man.
Eric, you gonna do any figure painting?
I do like finger painting.
Figure painting?
No, I like finger painting. Finger painting sounds way more fun. Only because every time I attempt to figure paint, it kind of looks like I finger painted it.
Well, that could be your excuse for them looking terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm saying I'm looking forward to finger painting.
Brian can teach you. I'll leave it at that. And commence with my update. I watched Guardians of the Galaxy. I think I mentioned that during our recent crossover episode with the folks over at Nerd Porn, but I want to mention it again. You should see it. It is a fun comic book spacey movie, and since I knew nothing about the characters, I got to enjoy it without being pissed about all the things they changed from the original source material, which is always refreshing. In addition, I've been home in Florida and haven't had a chance to do too much in the way of gaming. Watching a little wrestling is about it, which is pseudo-geeky, I understand. But today, I did have a chance encounter at the Grind Coffee Project, which Eric mentioned earlier, with a professor, doctor, researcher? I don't know. He goes by Dr. Grasshopper, and he is actually part of a project that is seeking funding on Indiegogo called No Pricks, which is not a man-hater's dream come true. Rather, it is actually a project that seeks to eliminate needle injections by replacing needles with patches that can deliver medication, therapy, what have you. And a pretty laudable goal. Brian, I know you're a big fan of crowdfunding for a noble purpose, and I don't think you could come up with a more noble purpose than this. I thought it was really cool that I got this chance encounter with this really educated man who really had some interesting things to say about this topic and others.
If I can editorialize just for a second, not that I don't approve of this project, because I think no more injections, number one, any step towards Star Trek is awesome, and number two, my grandmother is diabetic, so she pokes herself every single day and she bleeds and it's a shame and she shouldn't have to do that. I'm all for it for personal reasons as well, but looking at the project, I just think it's terrible that a company has to spend $1 million testing on animals before they're allowed to test on criminals or volunteers.
Yeah, the rigor is in the approval process, I guess, for no reason, but man, that does seem prohibitively expensive, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm a little weary of testing on inmates for several reasons. However, the volunteer thing should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, I would think if you were somebody, and diabetes patients are some of the first people they're targeting, if you were somebody who was suffering with that illness and you had an alternative perhaps to sticking yourself, I mean, I'm not in that position, so I shouldn't speak for anybody else, but I think I might be receptive to volunteering. So anyway, nopricks.com, and of course check out their Indiegogo campaign. They have a pretty ambitious funding goal. I think they have a little over a month to reach it. They've barely gotten started on that down that path, so I'd really like it if those numbers went up. And always great to encounter an intellectual trying to change the world at the Grind Coffee Project, our unofficial non-sponsor. I think that's it for the updates, though. Unless you guys have anything else, I think we can probably fire up the machinery of our retooled Dream Factory to crank out some top-quality sequels. You guys want to do that? No one objects. Okay, let's fire up the machinery and commence with noises. Bing, bang, ring, ring, ring. Good to know that our factory is up and running again. All the dust bunnies have been driven out, and we are ready to get going. I will lead things off, because I was the one who kind of pitched this zany idea to you guys, and over the objections of our board of directors, decided to convert the factory into a movie studio. Basically, we're going to throw out a sequel of our choosing to a franchise of our choosing. So I should say a sequel that we come up with for a franchise of our choosing. I'm going to go first. Mine is for the Conan franchise. The movie I see in my head is Conan Bloodlines, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger as the troubled King Conan, who has to bring together his two sons, played by Jason Momoa, I think is the actor's name, who is Khal Drogo, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He has to bring them together. They're feuding. The kingdom is divided, and he has to unite his family against a common enemy. That's my premise. What do you guys think?
I'm on board just because Arnold is King Conan. I mean, you had me there. I don't really care what the story is as long as it's not stupid, and admittedly, I guess I should really clarify as long as it's not stupid, because the last Conan movie was not really good. But with Arnold on board, that's half the battle for me.
I'm particularly excited for this one, because they are working on a King Conan movie, aren't they?
Yes, and I hope he has sons, and I hope it's played. I hope the sons are played by those two actors.
This one might be our closest to reality yet.
Conan Bloodlines. Would you add anything to it? Anything more actors, different actors? Would you have anything in mind beyond what I put out there as the general premise?
I'm wondering who's going to play the spunky Conan daughter who winds up overachieving at the end and saving the brothers from something terrible.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. The almost immediate criticism would be, where are Conan's daughters? And you would, of course, need a female who would end up being the most capable and tougher than the brothers and the king. So who would play that heroine? No candidates come to mind.
Who was in Guardians of the Galaxy? The guy everyone thinks she's going to play the evil Sith in 7.
Oh, the girl who played Nova? Was that her name, Nova?
Oh, Nebula.
Nebula, that's it. Shows you what I know about that property. What about her? Yeah, she seemed like she did a good job in this movie, so she could be the actual hero of this Conan movie.
Oh, well, you know who that is under that makeup, right?
Yeah, Nebula.
No, okay. No, that's the character. I mean, you know who the actress, what she's famous for prior to this.
She looked familiar, but I couldn't tell who she was.
If I'm not mistaken, that's Amelia Pond.
Oh. She'd be okay.
That means nothing to me.
Doctor Who.
The hot redhead.
Oh.
So she could summon the doctor to help her help Conan's family defeat the evil.
Yeah, and this may be a tangent, but did anyone else watch that movie and look at Nebula the whole time and go, I'm pretty sure that's just Ventress?
I didn't really get the connection, because Ventress and anything from the Clone Wars series is not very high in my esteem. I did not immediately make that connection, no.
But aesthetically, they were really similar.
Aesthetically, yeah. I will admit, once I saw the comparisons, yes, but my mind doesn't, I've watched all of Clone Wars now, and my mind doesn't use Clone Wars as the baseline for anything except for stuff I don't want.
No, I think her being Amelia Pond is far more important than her looking Ventress.
Yeah, well, now I know why I recognize the face. I kept looking at her and thinking, man, she looks familiar.
It also explains why the acting of that character, while not terrible, was a little shaky, and that's because she was doing an accent.
Oh, yeah, she was doing a Nebulan accent. That's hard for any actress.
Ah, I see what you did there. No, I mean, look, accents are difficult, and I didn't think she did a bad job, but there were definitely times, because I know what she's supposed to sound like, you know? She's done enough stuff that I've seen, where I've seen her just speak in her normal dialect. And when I watched that, you could tell the parts of the accent that were forced here and there. Not terrible. It wasn't a deal breaker. No one probably noticed it who wasn't paying attention. But it was there.
Brian, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet?
Not yet.
And you're not a Doctor Who fan?
The opposite?
Okay, so none of this means anything to you. A cute redhead will be Conan's daughter. And I will add to that, we might as well add the cute redhead from Game of Thrones while we're at it and have two cute redhead Conan's daughters.
It should tell you just how much I dislike everything Doctor Who has become, that I'm not enamored with a cute redhead.
Oh my. So because of her association with Doctor Who, your normal attraction to cute redheads is nullified?
I'm sure if I saw her in Guardians of the Galaxy outside of the context or whatever, it would resume.
How do you feel about bald blue girls?
Which one did you choose in Mass Effect? Did you choose the bald blue girl in that game, Brian?
I think I chose the guy in Mass Effect.
Well done.
That's who I actually picked up was the blue... Well, I can't believe it. Liara? Is that her name? From Mass Effect?
Yeah, Liara. And that is also who I picked just about every time around with one or two playthroughs as an exception, because I have played the game, all three games through at least, maybe seven times now. And to be honest, my favorite relationship is playing as a female Shepherd and courting Liara.
Well, there you go. Liara is who I saw, not Ventress. And we now have a potential Conan's daughter in the actress that played the Liara lookalike Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm going to add the redhead from Game of Thrones, who I also find attractive, just because it makes sense for Conan to have two pale red-haired daughters and two like dark-skinned sons.
They can be twins.
Is it geeky of me? I mean, I know that's the whole damn point of the show, but is it that bad that I'm sitting here like biting my lips saying Liara wasn't a girl technically?
Liara had boobs, therefore she was a girl.
She wasn't male or female.
She self-identified as a female.
She did, I guess. And we should respect that.
How hateful of you, Eric.
I know, yeah. I'm sorry.
Wait, they were they were females because they had matriarchs and everything, that race, Liara's race.
But that's just lost in translation. I mean, I'm sure that's not their actual language. We were hearing it through a universal translator.
Well, then the default would be patriarch. Everybody knows male is the default. I kid. Moving on past all of my misogyny. There you have it. Conan Bloodlines. His kids don't look the same because only Conan's strongest offspring survive no matter what their background. And that's why he has a collection of children rivaling those of Randy Quaid in the crappy Independence Day movie. And that's my first submission. So I think we have a green light on this project. Who wants to go next?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Why not? This is one, and I'm going to make my friend Dave actually proud for once, because he tends to hate every movie ever. But I think this is a movie whose time has come, because when it first hit, it really didn't hit its mark, because it was trying to follow the first wave of comic book movies that began with Tim Burton's Batman, and that is The Rocketeer. I think The Rocketeer is absolutely due for a sequel right now, especially on the heels of Guardians of the Galaxy, because it is a more lighthearted, brighter superhero film, like pseudo-superhero film. I guess he's not a superhero, but a hero.
I like pseudo-hero. That sounds good.
Let's go with pseudo-hero. But I think you can grit it up a little bit to make it kind of fit perfectly with what's being done now. And I love The Rocketeer. So I'm visioning a Rocketeer movie where we're in fully war-torn Europe at this point, and we're essentially just watching him on the front lines, machine gun in each hand, you know, flying over French and German cities.
Who's he shooting?
Everybody. Mostly Nazis, but everybody. Obviously Nazis. Lots and lots of Nazis. And to be honest, one of the reasons why I'm totally on board for this kind of thing is the one thing that bothered me about the first Captain America movie, not the first Captain America movie, that was a piece of garbage, the first Avenger, the more recent Captain America movies, was that the Red Skull wasn't portrayed as a Nazi. While he did work under Hitler's regime, you know, he was definitely Hydra-based. He had no time donned a true Nazi uniform. He did not have a swastika armband. And it bothered me. I kind of wanted to see that.
Well, he was originally portrayed as having been funded by the Nazis, but his was an offshoot organization with its own agenda. And if you recall, there were Nazi officers who were like, "Hey, what are you doing, man? You're kind of going against the Reich here." And I think he was like he out-eviled the Nazis or something.
It honestly felt like when they put this film together that either one of two thought processes came across their heads, and I'm talking about the Captain America movie, was either that one. kids are going to go see this because this is a superhero movie, and maybe we don't want to have Nazis everywhere, and maybe we don't want to really have this really demonic Nazi character on screen. And the other one is maybe, and this is always possible, Nazis have been kind of overdone in the movies, and they were like, let's take another twist on this, because we've kind of done Nazis to death. And to me, you could never do Nazis to death unless you're doing Nazis to death.
Nazis, like, always work. They're like orcs. They work as, like, an enemy. But if I see a movie with orcs, I'm not like, oh, orcs, how bold. Like, I almost expect to see Nazis as the bad guys now. Like, they're kind of played out.
But I'm not sick of it. That's the thing. I'm sick of a lot of other things. I'm not sick of World War II stuff. Like, when everyone was really on the ass of Call of Duty and they were like, oh, finally, Call of Duty is going in another direction. It won't be Nazis. I miss Nazi Call of Duty.
I mean, it's. I don't want you to think I'm not seeing where you're going with this. It's definitely... World War II is such a pivotal event, especially in our, like, our grandparents' lifetimes, you know, and such a world-shaping event from which America emerges, like, number one. But do you think that it resonates as much with the younger crowd?
Maybe yes, maybe no. And I suppose a new young crowd, it would have been like their great-grandparents' generation at this point. That was the greatest generation. So maybe it doesn't hang on, but that's... In a weird way, it's kind of what I'm worried about. I don't want that to be so forgotten, because it's just... It's done so much for us as a culture, both positively and negatively.
I don't disagree, but I just think human memory being what it is, it's going to go the way of World War One. World War One, by all accounts, was a far more bloody and brutal conflict. And it's like 100 years old now, and you know it's kind of something that's in the back of our collective memory. You don't see any fiction centered on World War One for the most part.
Not much. There's a few, but not much. And I think the issue with that is, like, when you think of World War One, there wasn't like this true, obvious evil superpower. And I'm not even going to argue that that's the reality of war. You know, in war, everyone's kind of evil, and you have to dehumanize your enemy in a way. But it was just so easy to paint the Nazi regime as such, and it still is, and it should be. That being said, again, we're back to the point, is I think the Rocketeer is the perfect candidate to kind of fill that void right now.
Okay, and his enemy will be the Riketeer, obviously.
Yeah, they're going to have to come up with some other guy that has some other flying mechanism that's kind of steampunk-esque for the Nazis.
I like the Riketeer, but okay,
does kind of work.
Okay, he has like twin jetpacks or something instead of just like the... I think the Rocketeer guy just has one, right?
It's one pack, but it depends. I mean, I've seen drawings of it where it's a single jet, and I've seen ones where it's like a big gold backpack, and it's got two jets coming out of the bottom, so you could do either one with it.
Well, the Nazi guy will just have an extra one, because, you know, the Nazis went overboard with stuff.
It can be like two jets in the shape of an SS.
There you go. Okay, cool. So we've got Rocketeer 2, Rise of the Riketeer. Brian, that brings it around to you, sir. What is your submission?
Well, I want to change my answer now. I want my sequel to be the Rocketeer flying along shooting orcs.
The Middle Earth A-tier.
Yeah, why not? Maybe that'll be the Battle of the Five Armies.
Well, actually, at this point, they might as well. If they're going to add characters that just willy-nilly, I mean, they might as well. I mean, but how do you work those together? Do you have him, like, fly into a library and somehow enter some weird, you know, portal into the world of literature?
No, you just insert him in with no reason, just like they did with Tariel or whatever her name is. You just have, like, Hitler and Goebbels, like, leading columns of orcs, and, like, the Rocketeer shows up, not on my watch, Nazis, and then they just start fighting.
I'm trying to think of what kind of nonstop camera pan you can use following a guy in a jetpack that will be silly enough for the Hobbit movie's kind of legacy.
Brian, this is your idea. You're going to have to bridge the gap. How are we going to get shoehorn in yet another inappropriate character?
Well, we can throw in someone else, too. We'll just throw in the Nazi thing where Rocketeer, I don't even know Rocketeer's real name, where Rocketeer goes to stop the summoning that created Hellboy and flies through the portal. So they get Rocketeer, we get Hellboy.
I like it. Eric, does that pass muster with you?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I actually have a really, like, massive fondness for crossover-style stuff, especially in comics, and I have no problem with it coming to movies. I mean, I had no problem with Jason versus Freddy. Worked for me, so have at it.
I was thinking, like, when Smaug dies, like, when he falls to the ground. You remember that scene from the movie, the one where I think it's called The Gate, and it had this really cool, like, claymation, like, stop-motion scene where a big monster fell down, and as soon as it hit the ground, it split into an army of little guys, and they kept marching. I don't know if you remember it, but it was a really cool movie, and a kid ends up beating evil by firing his model rocket into it or whatever.
I love that movie.
You'll love Battle of the Five Armies featuring Nazis and the Rocketeer when Smaug crashes to the ground after Bard shoots him with, I guess, what'll probably be a rocket launcher. I don't know what weapon they're going to use.
Dude, Toriel's going to do it.
Toriel's going to, like, behead Smaug.
No, she'll fire the golden spear or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. So after Toriel takes him
ballista.
Down. After Toriel and Arwen take down Smaug, as soon as he falls to the ground, from his ashes uprise Hitler and all the Nazi officers and a bunch of, like, Nazi stormtroopers. And that causes a rift in space-time, and then the hero from Rocketeer enters the scene.
Now, just to polish off, since this is, like, an absurd crossover at this point, when Smaug dies, can Lord Farquaad from Shrek actually come crawling out? Because he got eaten by a dragon at the end of Shrek, and then Donkey comes on and cries. It would be great.
Yeah, but is Farquaad a Nazi now or not?
Yeah, might as well be. I mean, if he was going to be alive after reemerging from a dragon in the Middle Ages, after being alive in the Middle Ages, and... Wait, why would he know about Nazis?
Well, Hitler got swallowed too, so while they were in the stomach, they talked politics.
Oh, gosh.
What if they just both rekindled their love of art and then went horseback riding together and fell in love?
That would work, too. That would work, too. Okay, I think we have Brian's premise down. So no more Stalin. Time to move on. Nobody likes my puns. I will come in with another one. I've got a great sequel planned. My sequel, and this isn't a joke, like, this is dead serious. Aliens versus Predators, plural both. Galactic warfare. Where the Xenomorph plague has just gotten out of control. Somehow it's spreading planet to planet. It's gone nuts. The alien predator creatures are trying to contain it. The humans are caught in the middle. Because now they have a fledgling space empire, and it's crumbling under this onslaught. And it's just movie after movie of what you've always wanted from that crossover but never got.
The ultimate way to do Alien vs. Predator, which they haven't done yet, is to just do the damn comic. Let's just understand, it's not modern day, which was nonsensical. They did two movies, they were both modern day, which was absurd. It was future, there were space marines. And essentially, like, they had some core concepts that were similar there, where, you know, the Predators were using the aliens as the ultimate game, and the Space Marines get caught in the middle of it. But I don't see how you make that movie without Space Marines and enjoy it.
Wait, but how is that really any different from what I'm saying? I'm basically taking that same concept you just outlined and...
Well, maybe that's the point I'm making. Maybe that's the point I'm making, is that you don't really even have to... It's already done. They just have to film it.
Okay, fine, we'll film the comic.
And I agree. Then I agree, yes. Film the comic.
All right, moving on. You got another one, Eric?
I'm going to probably lose both of you on this one. And if I don't, I'll be amazed. But my favorite action hero, and this is always debatable, and people argue with me all the time, and I don't care, is Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is my favorite action hero. I like him better than Arnold. I like him better than Sylvester Stallone. Die Hard, as far as I'm concerned, is the greatest action film ever made. That said, there are five... Die Hard films. Five. Only two of them are stellar, and that's 1 and 3. 2 is basically just a remake of 1, and 4 and 5 got a little nonsensical. They're fun. They're good fun romps, but they're not great films. 1 and 3 are. So that said, Bruce Willis did another awesome kind of comedic action star romp that deserves a sequel. And it's The Last Boy Scout.
I don't think I ever saw it, but I'll take your word for it if it deserves a sequel. Tell me about the sequel.
How have you not seen The Last Boy Scout, Brian?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to be all alone on this, so there's really no reason for me to tell you the sequel. I'm just going to say The Last Boy Scout deserves a sequel, and we're going to move on, because it's weird to talk about it when no one has any idea what I'm talking about.
Well, you can sell me on it. I mean, you totally, like, nuked
elevator pitch.
Right, give me the elevator pitch. You nuked the shit out of my idea, so go ahead.
All right, well, the original movie is basically Bruce Willis used to be a bodyguard for the president. Or, no, not for the president, but for some local senator. And he caught the senator doing, I forget, something BS, and he ends up punching the guy in the face. And basically, he becomes washed up. Like, and just ends up being, like, a crappy private investigator, and he's a drunk, and he loses his wife, and she leaves him because he's a drunk. So it's a lot like Die Hard in that sense. And he comes across Damon Wayans, who hires him, because Damon Wayans is a football player whose girlfriend was murdered because of, I forget, some prostitution thing gone wrong, something of that nature. No, I honestly don't even remember the whole details of the film.
Have you seen this one?
It's been a while. It's been a while. But basically, in a nutshell, you know, it carries on from there. And it's a fun action film, which involves a lot of nonsensical stuff happening on a football field, which is actually totally worth watching. And I don't see why, considering he's simply just a private investigator, and Damon Wayans at this point is kind of a washed up football player, why these two can't tag up again for like a million more films just under the same premise, the same thing they did with Die Hard.
Yeah, it sounds like they have a decent foundation for a series here. I wonder why they don't pick up with that.
They could go back to it now. It's been a while, and there's no reason why they couldn't even just say, oh, you know what, 15 years later or 20 years later.
Yeah, I mean, they did it with Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. Okay, I accept it.
Yeah, I kind of want you guys to watch The Last Boy Scout now.
I'll just wait for the sequel.
There you go.
Brian, you got another one?
I do. Hopefully you guys will have seen this one too. Anybody catch The Matrix?
Oh, yeah, that was good.
One was great, right?
The first one's awesome.
You remember two?
No, I don't remember two. I heard they made a third one.
How did two end?
Two ended with them, like, waiting for the machines to attack or something, right?
Well, before that, there was a scene where there's a Santa Claus-looking guy explaining anomalies in the most nonsensical manner possible.
I'm going to defend The Matrix 2, Brian. I know you've got a more important point to make, but that wasn't really nonsensical. Everything he said, like, made sense.
He said it really weird.
Yeah, it was unnecessary, it was drawn out, it was long-winded, and it lost about 90% of the audience.
Well, he basically said, and I got this, like, first take, and I'm not trying to brag, but it kind of irritated me that of all the things to take exception to, some dialogue written at, like, a ninth grade level through 90% of the audience, he basically tells you that the Neo phenomenon is a necessary result of an accumulation of errors in The Matrix, and Neo, the whole resurrection of Neo is just like a pressure release valve. Like, he has to come out, manifest, make the inevitable choice that he's going to make. They're calculating that he's going to make a certain choice that's going to rebalance the Matrix, and then it's good for another generation.
That sounds awesome, Tom. You should have been in the movie and spared us the Santa Claus guy, because you just summed it up in 10 seconds better than he tried to explain it in like 15 minutes.
He was long-winded, but for fuck's sake, this poor guy was roped into this movie. He was going to say something, damn it. I think he was like a good actor who was like, why am I in this piece of crap? And he just like ad-libbed that.
Yeah, I mean, you need somebody to play Cyber Claus. I get it.
Cyber Claus. Okay, anyway, objection to Cyber Claus notwithstanding. Was somebody going to make a point about the real sequel?
Where was Neo?
Oh, at the end of Matrix 2?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was in the real world or something, wasn't he?
Like, he was missing, right? No one knew where he was.
Yeah.
Okay, so Matrix 3 starts out. They're all missing Neo. No one knows what's going to happen. They're all freaked out. Neo shows up. Hey, guys. Sorry I was missing, but I woke up and was in the real fucking world. This is all in the Matrix.
Oh, okay. So like, it's the whole thing. Even Neo leading them is in the Matrix.
The computers installed a second layer of Matrix so that when the necessary Neo event happened, he was still asleep.
Okay, so it's like an added containment around the Matrix.
It's Matrix Inception.
Yes, Matrix Inception.
That would have been more intellectually satisfying than like, okay, you're in the real world, which is just like kind of a CG mess, and I don't really see any purpose in this movie anymore, which is how I felt.
Isn't that kind of a cop-out? I mean, isn't that the whole thing was in a child's head kind of cop-out?
No, because it was all necessary for him to actually wake up. That, like, validates what the architect was saying.
Yeah, but then what? Now he's awake and he's in the real world, and then...
This is the final failsafe, and now the real decision is to be made. Like,
the only benefit I see in that is it would have given them the opportunity to stop stringing along what they were already doing, and maybe even redesign yet a third reality.
Well, it would have been about the third reality, because now Neo could be number one and wake other people up and like lead them to actually overthrow the machines, instead of the machines just going, you guys were actually pretty decent about this, we'll just die.
Right, and that was another unsatisfying part of The Matrix. And if you ever watched the Animatrix, like series of little animated shorts that went with it, they went a long way to kind of explaining the machine's motivations. One of the main complaints about the Matrix series is, why didn't they just use cows? Why didn't they plug pigs in? I don't get it. The machines were not just unthinking machines. The machines wanted peace. The machines wanted symbiosis with their creators. And that third layer, that layer for Neo rising even above them, could have put the humans back in the driver's seat. The history is, the humans built the machines. The machines got smart and wanted rights as sentient beings. The humans tried to crush the machines. The machines, in turn, crushed the humans. Now you've got Neo back in that ultimate place in a far more believable manner where he gets to see the machine's point of view. Like, they're really seeking a symbiotic relationship. What can I do?
Well, they have a symbiotic relationship, really.
The Matrix is, in fact, a symbiotic relationship. But, right, like, look at all the trouble they went to and all the risk they took on to keep humans alive in their pinnacle state at the late 20th century. Faced with that reality, coming to that realization, now you have Neo in a position to just flip the switch, essentially, and ruin it all. Now you've got a real problem for him to face, I think, you know?
I have to backtrack a little bit, because you attacked the pseudo-science community who would have said, why didn't they just use cows? Which is fairly logical thinking until you offered your explanation. I'm going to go with the truly scientific argument, which is using people as energy simply wouldn't work.
Well, it would have to be bolstered. And they do that cop-out where they use it in conjunction with a form of fusion, which if you already had the form of fusion, it's superfluous.
Exactly.
To use humans. Yes.
Right,
yes,
it was completely useless. It was just a bonus.
But again, I rationalize that away as there was a faction represented by the Oracle, let's say, who were human sympathizers, who wanted a symbiotic relationship with the creators, who felt a certain kinship with humanity and didn't want to just wipe them out, which they easily could have done.
Right. I will only make the argument again because it's necessary to make the movie work, but the energy excuse they use in the movie, which was yours of they combined with a form of fusion, is the equivalent of me going, in order to make my flashlight work, I put 2D batteries in, but just for good measure, I jam a dead chipmunk in there.
Well, this is also not talked about enough in the movie, and I think this could work very well into Brian's like next layer sequel. The Matrix wasn't just like a black box that humans got thrown into. The machines were in there all the time. Agent Smith and his ilk were living in the Matrix, learning, experiencing what it was to be human. Like, human civilization kind of played out within the Matrix in a certain sense. They didn't... This is me inferring a lot of this. They didn't really conk you over the head with that. And I think Neo, with this new 90,000-foot view, could have maybe become more aware of that. I like this notion, Brian, of him really waking up.
I spent 6 months, 8 months, however long it was, between 2 and 3, super excited for 3. I was like, no, this is going to be awesome. They're going to do it right. He's going to wake up. Oh, my God, it's going to be... And then they did that. Yeah.
I actually had really low expectations after 2. I was not fond of 2 at all.
I thought 2 was necessary evil. I thought 2 made no sense, and they did all this weird stuff, but it had to happen in order for Neo to actually, like, wait a minute.
Yes, but according to the law of awesome trilogies, the second one is supposed to be the best movie, and not the absolute worst, which means that if I saw the second one and it was worse than the first one, I can't assume the third one would be better, because that means the second movie was the piece of crap, and that never happens.
I assumed that the third one was going to be as bad as the second one, and was surprised that it was slightly not as bad as the second one.
No, it was much worse than the second one.
Was it?
Oh, it was much worse than the second one.
3 was much worse.
3? Which one had the booty dance? Was that 2?
The rave was in 2, I think.
Yeah.
3 had the one animation shown from 42 different angles.
Wait, what was he doing?
You remember when Neo and Agent Smith, like, punched and their fist met and it created this huge explosion? And then they rotated the screen a little bit. And then they rotated the screen a little bit. They just showed it over and over for, like, 30 minutes.
Yes. So am I to understand that some of the camera effects would be toned down in your ideal sequel?
Yeah, we'd only show that one once.
I agree.
There was actually something about the future that the Matrix movies got right. And the only thing that they got absolutely right about the future was the dance party. Now, hear me out on this. Scientifically speaking, everyone at that dance party, and go watch it, is mixed race. Everybody. Aside from, oddly enough, and this is the funny part because I guess things don't change as much as we hope they would, aside from the, like, panel of leaders, I don't know what they were called in the movie, which are two really pale white people, and then a couple definitely African-American or black people. No one of mixed race is on that board of directors at all. But everyone at the party was.
So you're saying in the future everybody's going to be like a mixed race or whatever, everybody's going to be like kind of tan-colored or whatever?
Absolutely, we are definitely headed that way, and you can talk to geneticists and so on, and there's no doubt in their minds, if you even were to accelerate like 200 years, it would be, I'm sure it would be shocking to some people, like the Klan, but yeah, we're definitely headed in that direction.
Would it be shocking to like the Black Panthers too?
It might be.
Any means necessary.
Yeah, you know, this is sort of an aside, but I hope not. I actually think one of the beauties of the human race is its diversity, at least in appearance. And if everybody kind of looks the same someday, that makes for kind of a boring human race in certain ways.
Yeah, well, if you look at, you know, the history of biology on the planet, diversity doesn't last.
That's true, which is problematic when you consider that we talk about how diversity being strength all the time. Does that mean our strength is fleeting?
No, it's literally, I mean, that's how, in an odd way, that's how evolution works. You're strengthening through that diversity. The diversity is a means to an end, in a way.
But we're going to get rid of the diversity by all becoming extras in the Matrix.
And again, if we look at the history of biology, what happens then?
Then the machines take over because we're all extras in the
Not
Matrix.
Not the Matrix history, Jesus Christ.
Look, you need like the team of multi-ethnic people to make the audience feel good when they all get together to solve a problem instead of hating each other. You can't have everybody be the same.
Yeah, I guess so. I was talking, you know, Earth biology at this point and not future Matrix biology, which, I mean, I guess is still Earth, but, you know.
Look, the other thing that they got right is that we are going, not only are we all going to be like this tan race of people who choose really bad times to engage in raves, but we're also going to invent machines that are too smart for our own good. So I think we need a rainbow coalition of smart people, as in the modern American cinema, to take care of that problem someday. So we're going to have to put people of decidedly distinct quote-unquote races in stasis so that we can resurrect them so they can solve our problems during a montage in the future.
By the way, how do you feel about the film theory, and you can find this one all over the internet, that the Matrix is actually a non-numbered, way later sequel to Terminator.
I like it. Brian, what are your thoughts?
I've never heard that one before. That's interesting.
And it makes perfect sense when you look at it.
Are there any? Well, yeah, there's a black guy in Terminator.
Wow.
Now I'm like thinking about like how it would all fit in. Sadly, the guy who accidentally like brought about the end of the world in Terminator 2. What was his name? Dyson or whatever? The scientist?
Yeah, Miles Dyson.
Yeah, yeah. He was a black guy, I think.
Yes, yeah, he was.
I remember his little kid playing with his remote control toy and everything. Yeah, yeah, that whole scene was kind of... That whole scene was kind of sad.
God, I just thought of something that's really problematic. Apparently, if we live in some post-apocalyptic future, there are tons of black people in all these movies. But if you go with like a really pristine, ideal future, like the Jetsons, there's no black people. Like, why would they do that?
Well, that was like the...
I don't know if the Jetsons like are the best example.
No, I know. It popped into my head, and it was like immediately, like, I just cringed at it. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but do you remember the show Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law?
Yes. Yes.
One of my favorite scenes in that show, and it was a genius piece of writing, was George Jetson is on the stand. He's on trial. And obviously, you know, he's pulled out of his cartoon and into this other cartoon. And he points towards the juror's box. And he's like, "What is that?" And they pan over to the juror's box and there's a black guy. And he's like, "What is that?" And then you realize they pan over a little bit more and it's like a jury computer. And that's what he's talking about.
Oh, okay, okay. So he wasn't talking about a black person.
Nice. But they definitely made like the hint that that's what he was talking about.
I have to ask a serious question about the Jetsons. I always thought Mr. Spacely was, like, Turkish or something. Like, I thought he was, like, Middle Eastern.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. Do you know what year the Jetsons is supposed to take place?
Like, now?
1994.
Oh, boy. Wow. Wow, that is so sad. I mean, we have none of that technology.
We weren't even close. I mean, that was the year I graduated high school. We weren't even close.
I know. Say what you want about the 60s, and it's sort of, you know, America still working towards being a little more inclusive for people of all different colors, but they really did have a pretty ambitious view of the future, and we didn't make it anywhere close. Sad to say. So a sequel to now might be a better future. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
You guys want to do one more round, or you want to wrap it?
We could do like a lightning round and just name off some movies we thought maybe deserved sequels.
I like it. Let's do a lightning round. I will go first. Baby about the Brontosaurus.
Baby Secret of the Lost Legend.
Yes, I think there should be Baby 2, Ain't Nobody's Baby.
Nobody puts Baby in the corner?
Could it be that Baby has a kid and it's called like Baby 2, Baby Daddy?
Baby Boogaloo?
Baby 2, Baby Ruth. Yeah, all right, a sequel to Baby. Next.
District 10.
District 10, I think I've been waiting on forever.
Now, District 10 had all black people, or District 9.
I think that's a movie that everyone's waiting for. I don't know anyone who would be opposed to that.
Actually, they should make a sequel to that. Where was that movie set? Was it set
South
like
Africa.
Okay. I know we're doing lightning round, but the whole thing there was to sort of contrast the former apartheid legacy of South Africa with like how the aliens were treated, right?
Absolutely. And we all know where you're going with this.
Where am I going? I was just going to ask that question.
If you were going to update that movie for today using modern pretext.
I still don't know where you're going.
Let's just say that it might still be set on the African continent, but it would be decidedly further north. Would that suffice, Eric?
There you go. Yeah, there you
go. Okay. Oh, that is too much of a firecracker to get into.
It is, and I don't want to touch it. I don't want to touch it.
Okay. Brian, you go next.
He did, actually. It's my turn. The Last Starfighter.
Oh.
Long overdue for a sequel. I mean, it was a movie that used computer-generated imagery really early on. Things are significantly better, but they could pull off that style kind of the same way. I really almost thought it was going to happen after the Tron reboot.
Yes.
Or sequel. I was like, as soon as that happened and I saw that they could pull it off and that they could kind of still adhere to an art style that did it justice, my first thought was, we're going to get a Last Starfighter sequel.
I would be okay with that. That was a great movie and does deserve a sequel.
It does.
You basically led into the very next one I was going to say. I'm ready for, like, another Tron movie.
Yeah, I was convinced they signed on for a few, so I don't know what the holdup is.
Me neither.
Too busy making Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Tron better than almost everything. I like Tron, like... Tron's like my number two after Star Wars. I really, really dig that property.
I do too, and people were very iffy on Tron 2.0. I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I think I just couldn't stop staring at it. The art style was just gorgeous.
It was absolutely gorgeous. And they did such a good job of explaining how things were upgraded, and now that's why things look so much better. It was fantastic. Tron was great. And, actually had some diversity, unlike the first Tron. Now I'm thinking of every movie in terms of, like, having a varied cast.
It makes me happy to know times have changed that much, though, that we look at that and we're like, wow, it's kind of evident when I didn't really even think about it before.
Yeah. Definitely. Brian, you got another one?
Forrest Gump.
How are you going to do a sequel to that?
Well, I want to see, like, bumbling Forrest get involved with all the current world leaders. Like, I want to see him and W, like, hit it off. And then he goes, like, on a what was it, paddleball? It was ping pong, right? He goes on, like, a ping pong tour and pisses off Kim Jong-il.
I gotta say, I think you sold me on this. I'm sold.
Forrest Gump, ambassador to the world. It has to take place during the W administration, because it's too funny that they get along, and then Bush sends him out as, like, a goodwill ambassador. I love it! Oh my god, that's great.
Yeah, I'm all on board for that one. I wasn't as when you said it. When you said Forrest Gump, I was like, he's going to say something silly. And while you did say something silly, I want to see that something silly.
Forrest Gump 2, Lost in the Woods. All right, Eric, it's over to you to try to top that. You're the last one.
I actually, before I go on, I kind of wanted to call it Forrest Gump 2, Mission Accomplished.
Nice.
Ouch. Oh, okay, take us home, Eric.
Last one, and I'm going to go with a controversial one on this one. Unbreakable.
Oh, you know, I never saw that. That was another Bruce Willis joint, right?
It was, and maybe I got a hard-on for Bruce Willis in this particular episode we're recording here. But to me, well, first of all, we can agree it's the last good movie that guy made. It's his second movie and the last good one he made.
I liked Signs.
Signs was good for 70% of the movie. For the most part, it was okay. I mean, it was a decent film. It's just not great. His first movie was spectacular. Unbreakable is really, really solid, and I don't think people give it the credit it deserves, because all it really is a superhero origin movie, and a really good one at that. And the reason I say that is, unlike most superhero origin films, it is 100% grounded in reality.
I never saw the movie. The premise just is he's like a normal guy that suddenly finds that he just can't be harmed, right?
Yeah, I don't want to give too much, because, I mean, again...
That's a complicated discussion.
It's a twist ending for this guy, and I feel ashamed that I would potentially be ruining this for you. So I'm not going to ruin the ending, the total twist at the end, but basically, yeah, I mean, he finds that no matter what happens, he can't be harmed, and he does find that he actually does have a weakness, which is, like, he can't swim, so, like, water is his weakness.
Oh, wow. So it turns out he's a statue.
I guess, in a weird way, yeah.
Wow.
He's a golem.
Or Bruce Willis. Oh, is he? He's a golem? Okay.
He could be. No, but honestly, I just really... People were like, it's okay. I fell in love with that movie immediately, because at that time, we had a very limited amount of superhero movies to choose from, and none of them were really good origin stories. None of them.
Well, so you're voting for M. Night Shyamalan. I think that is how you pronounce his name. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I'm voting for Unbreakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
You're voting for this guy who has been vilified so much, this M. Night Shyamalan, to come back and make a sequel to this movie and resume his career.
I think it's the only thing that can salvage his career, and I would, if I were a studio that were going to sign him right now and say, you're making Unbreakable 2, we want Unbreakable 2, the only stipulations I would give him is, one, of course, you have to get the original cast back. So you need Bruce Willis, and you need Samuel L. Jackson, or we're not doing this. And two would be, you're not allowed to do a twist ending. We get it.
M. Night Shyamalan, the Vanilla Ice of filmmakers, once beloved, now fallen from grace, Eric proposes a comeback. I think this is an excellent way to conclude this run of sequels from the Dream Factory. You guys have anything else you want
to
add?
I'd like to point out the track record of superhero movies being comeback vessels for once great Asian directors. He's Asian, right? That counts.
I guess India is part of Asia, right? Or see, he's Indian, right? Not Pakistani.
Yeah, well, the classification Indian would apply in Britain. He is technically from the Indian subcontinent, which is part of Asia, so yes.
Yeah. So we're talking John Woo here.
Or Ang Lee.
Wait, how did a superhero movie give Ang Lee a comeback?
No, that destroyed his career. It wasn't a comeback.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe we want to rethink this one.
Oh, we might actually sink this guy's career by encouraging him to do a superhero movie again. I see. All right. We do not advise that anybody take anything we said during this episode seriously, except for the fact that the human race is going to evolve into MTV dance video extras in the future and be ruled by machines. And therefore, we propose that the three of us be frozen to be thawed later to save the day.
Makes sense.
Okay, well, until such time as we are put into stasis, we will continue to work hard on the Nerd Extravaganza podcast and bring all this quality free entertainment. In exchange, we ask that you consider subscribing to our podcast in iTunes or whatever other podcatching software you might happen to use. Or if you prefer a streaming solution, we can also offer you Stitcher.
Join us on all the social medias. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, circle us on Google+, join our Facebook group, the Nerdstravaganza HQ.
Visit us at nerdstravaganza.com, where you can catch our show notes and learn more about all the topics we discussed, or drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And if you miss any of those details, don't worry. We will be sure to knock you over the head with them again and again in the many sequels to follow.